From the Society of American Archivists, this is Archives in Context, a podcast highlighting archival literature and technologies, and most importantly, the people behind them.
Welcome to this episode of the Archives in Context podcast. My name is Chris Burns, and I'm here with Anna Trammell.
Hi, everyone.
Today, we are speaking with Jennifer Johnson, Director of the Corporate Archives at Cargill Incorporated. She has previously worked as an archivist for the U.S. Department of Energy and a government records specialist for the Minnesota State Archives. Jennifer has held a number of leadership roles within SAA, the Midwest Archives Conference, and the Twin Cities Archives Roundtable, and is currently the Vice Chair, Chair-Elect of the SAA Business Archives Section. She is the author of the essay, Cultivating Success, the Business of Archives, in the recently published volume in SAA's Archival Fundamentals Series 3, Leading and Managing Archives and Manuscripts Programs. Thanks for joining us, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So Jennifer, Chris and I, and probably many of our listeners, work in university archives. So we're really interested in learning more about the unique role of archivists working within corporate settings. Could you tell us about the Cargill Corporate Archives and how the archives fits into the larger Cargill Corporation?
Certainly. It may be helpful if I start with a little bit of background about Cargill itself. We're a B2B company, so business to business, which means you may not recognize a lot of our products, even if they are available to consumers. So Cargill is a global food, agriculture, and risk management company. We're private and family owned. We have about 155,000 employees worldwide working in 70 different countries. The corporate archives sits within the global communications area for the overall corporation. We've recently just undergone a reorganization, so I have an as yet unnamed new manager, and we're all trying to figure out what this reorganization means for us. But generally, I sit within corporate communications. Global communications includes communicators in the businesses and functions, media relations, digital and social media, and all of Cargill's corporate channels, such as our website and our global LinkedIn channels and Twitter channels. And within corporate communications, I sit with the team that focuses on internal and employee communications, financial and shareholder communications, and the speechwriters.
What are some of the unique challenges that archivists encounter working in business archives?
Well, there are the archival differences, such as who uses the records and how they get used. Since we are private and our archives is closed to the public, most of my requests come from within the company. So all of my users are internal. But when it comes to actual use of my collection, I'm the primary user. I serve as researcher, historian, interpreter, and I'm the primary access point for everything in the archives. So that's one unique difference. I don't have typical researchers in the sense that people want to come and see the records themselves. And I think I'm just constantly focused on outreach for the archives. And I think that's an important distinction from some other non-institutional archives, perhaps, that I am constantly thinking about users within the company, how to cultivate new users, building relationships. So there's a lot of communication skills that my job requires, as well as forcing myself to be an extrovert and getting to know people and building relationships that happens on a daily basis. I mentioned it because that's something I didn't prepare for before I became an archivist.
So in your chapter in SAA's new book, Leading and Managing Archives and Manuscript Programs, you write about this importance of communication and importance of storytelling. Can you tell us about how you have employed storytelling techniques to communicate the value of archives to people within the Cargill Corporation?
Absolutely. And this is a skill I'm still working on and working on daily to improve. I use storytelling, but I don't necessarily consider myself a good storyteller as of yet. But I do try. What I try to do is connect what happened historically within Cargill to the present. So I'm trying to present some sort of context for what current employees see or practices they follow or values they witness within the company and the current state of our corporation and relate how history matters within that context. For example, I do an onboarding session for our corporate communicators and government relations people and corporate responsibility people. We all used to be part of corporate affairs, where I touch upon Cargill's culture and values and what makes Cargill Cargill. So I'm trying to tell a story about how values that they see in practice within Cargill, where those values came from, and providing some context as to why is business ethics so important? Why are we such a safety-focused company? And those are the stories that I'm currently trying to tell in a meaningful way for people when they come to work on a daily basis.
Great. Well, we couldn't agree more about the importance of storytelling. Anna and I are both members of the Committee on Public Awareness for SAA, who has prioritized storytelling and story learning about how to do storytelling as one of our main activities. And we've also worked a lot on elevator speeches over the last couple of years, and was great to see that echo in your essay about storytelling. And you also mentioned in your chapter the importance of being prepared to give a short introduction to the archives or an elevator speech, so you can take advantage of those short opportunities to develop new relationships within the organization. So our question is, what makes an effective archives elevator speech?
I think you need to have a few elevator speeches prepared. It really depends on who your audience is and the time you have. I try to keep it simple. I don't necessarily go into details about what the archives is or what it is I'm collecting. Try to just jump right into what is unique about my position. So sometimes I'll just say to people, anything you want to know about the history of Cargill, I'm the person you would talk to. And that gets their attention because anything is pretty broad. Sometimes I talk about something I've been working on or a question I've been responding to, and I use that as a gateway into talking about what's really interesting and exciting about my job. And then if they really want to dive deep, then I'll start talking about what it is that we collect, what's in the archives, and what are my current challenges, and what might be of interest to them, depending on what business or function that they happen to be in.
Yeah, that's so important to keep in mind as you're launching into this elevator speech, to try to make that connection and show the person you're talking to how the archives can impact their particular role within the organization. So continuing on this theme about communicating the value of archives, you talk in your chapter about how leaders must learn to speak the language of the archives audiences. And one example of this is the way you talk about corporate heritage instead of corporate history. So could you tell our listeners about why this distinction is important when describing your role in the corporation to those who might not understand what archivists do?
I think I touch on heritage more than history for a few reasons. One, I don't want to turn off anyone who didn't enjoy a history class in their past, whether it was junior high, high school, or college. And I work in a business that's very focused on trading and markets and money and food and research. Those are all really financial-based roles or chemistry-based roles or scientists. They're not necessarily the liberal arts major that I'm used to talking to. And I also focus on heritage because I'm talking about Cargill as a community. And like most communities, we have our own culture, we have our own values, we have our own language, and we have our own behaviors that have grown over time. So heritage is really more encompassing of what makes us unique as a company and what's the context for all of those practices you may be seeing, as opposed to history, which I think most people tend to associate with, on such and such a date, this thing happened. Whereas I'm more interested in why did that happen and why is it meaningful for you as an employee today?
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense. We really appreciated in your essay your description of how you identified areas where you needed to improve in order to grow as a leader. That was a nice glimpse into your personal journey. Of course, nobody's sort of born with all the skills and knowledge that they need to be a leader or a manager. Could you tell our listeners a little more about these areas that you identified and how you worked to develop or improve in those areas?
Absolutely. I was very fortunate to have a very direct manager who wasn't shy about encouraging me to step out of my comfort zone. And since I've always been pretty terrible at coming up with my own 5-year plan, he would point out things gently that he thought I should work on. And one of those was public speaking in the sense of being more comfortable communicating in meetings or within groups of colleagues, being maybe more effective at communicating the archives message. And he certainly wasn't wrong. I've always been shy. If you ask any teacher I've ever had, they would always tell my parents, oh, she's so quiet. So, I mean, I think it's really hard to change those lifelong behaviors. They're ingrained. So how do you just improve? Because I'm not suddenly going to become a verbose, loud person. And that's why I turned to Toastmasters within Cargill to address those public speaking issues. And I'm still a member. Now that I've moved into the director role, as I give more tours and give more presentations, I find it's helpful to have a structured time on a weekly and monthly basis where I can focus on those public speaking skills and receive feedback, and other people can help me identify areas on which I still need to grow. That was one area. The second was one I had identified for myself. I just didn't feel like I was a very good strategic thinker. And I don't know if I necessarily figured out the right way to become a strategic thinker, because I think that just comes with practice. But I did try to take more ownership of different projects, so that I understood what managing something on a project level, what that meant with both within the company and for the archives, and how bigger projects fit into the broader direction of the archives. Some of my leadership roles outside of Cargill, because of the position of the archives where there were only two of us, I really only had one step up that I could take. When the director either retired, or as he liked to say, when he was hit by a bus one day. So I really had to think about, I didn't have anybody to manage, so I had to think about how do I get those experiences through my professional organizations. And that's why I've taken on a number of leadership roles in those organizations. In addition to just liking to know how professional organizations work, I just like to know what makes them tick. I think those were two of the areas that I had identified that I needed to work on, and yeah. They're still not perfect. I'm still not a perfect strategic thinker, and I have areas where I need to improve with communicating, but I do feel that I took some appropriate steps at the right time to work on my challenge areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, if this interview is any any evidence. It seems like your communication skills are fantastic. You seem very, very comfortable.
Well, I've been a Toastmasters member for a long time.
Is there other advice that you would give archivists who are new to leadership or want to develop their leadership skills?
Well, what I was hoping to convey in my chapter is that anyone can be a leader, even if you're not particularly the leader or manager or director of your archives. And I think that's particularly important if you're a lone arranger or in a small archive, or even if you're in a very large archive and you have a very specific role, because your particular relationships and your network are just as invaluable to knowing what's going on in your organization or learning about collections that are available as the manager or the director's relationships are. So some of that is trying to find and be really strategic about projects that you accept both within the archives and then outside of the archives. I'm a big proponent of joining professional organizations, even if you don't want to necessarily take on a leadership role, but it's always a good networking experience, getting the opportunity to develop your own personal group of archivists outside of your institution that you can talk to, ask questions, reflect on how other people do similar work, and get feedback on what you could possibly do differently. And I've really tried to keep up on various skills that don't necessarily come into practice here in being in a business archive, just because you never know what's going to happen. I want to be prepared to be an archivist anywhere. For example, we don't use EAD for our finding aids. We don't even have traditional finding aids, such as you would find in many public archives. But I do like to know and be aware of what's happening with EAD, what are the new developments, remind myself of the structure and importance of XML, so on and so forth. But I really think that just trying to focus on your relationship circle and how that can be of value to you within your own institution, that's really something that everybody brings to the table and they can use as an asset within their archives, no matter whether you're a beginning archivist, mid-career, or late-career archivist.
Good advice. We already talked a little bit about all of the things we loved in your essay that really align nicely with the work that we've been doing on the Committee on Public Awareness in terms of storytelling and elevator speeches and even public communication skills. One of the great connections in your essay to this podcast is you included a line in your essay about the archivist as superhero. And we always end our interviews with this one very important question, which is, what superpower would you most like to have and why?
I like to know what's going on, so I would choose mind reading.
Ooh, good one.
I'm a terrible pest when it comes to any gift-giving season, whether it's my birthday or Christmas, because I just like to know, or I like to guess or figure out what I'm getting, and then I like to know things, so I would choose mind reading. Maybe invisibility, but mind reading is top of mind. I would try to use my power for good and not evil.
Yeah, there's a burden that comes with having a superpower. We've learned that.
Right? You can use it or abuse it.
Great. Well, thanks so much for talking with us today, Jennifer.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's been a great conversation. It reminded me a lot of my first job out of library school was actually in a corporate archives and being the only archivist, in my case, in a landscape architecture firm where everyone else had a lot of similarities in their professional background and training and what they did on a day-to-day basis, and sort of the importance of communicating what an archives is, what you do within the organization, and also that importance of staying connected to your profession in any way that you can. So all that you wrote about and talked about definitely resonated with me.
I was going to say, sometimes you can play off that unique factor. What we do, at least what I do here at Cargill, is so unique and different from what most people are doing on a day-to-day basis that they are intrigued. And that's a nice way to use that opening into talking about other things and what they do.
And I'll just make a quick plug again for the Committee on Public Awareness on the Archives Aware blog. We have a series called There's an Archivist for That, where we interview archivists who are working in unique locations like the Cargill Corporation. So if you are interested in learning more about business archives, corporate archives, check that out.
Great. Well, thanks again, Jennifer, for talking with us. And thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of Archives in Context.
You've just listened to an episode of Archives in Context, the official podcast of the Society of American Archivists. Members of the podcast team include Bethany Anderson, Chris Burns, Ashley Levine, Nicole Milano, Anna Trammell, and Colleen McFarlane Rademacher. Opinions expressed in this podcast are our own and are not reflective of a particular institution. Be sure to like us on iTunes if you enjoyed what you heard, and join us again next time.